Okay, it says that I'm supposed to qualify briefly. My name's Mike Stevens. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 29th, 1987.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I have been amongst you wackos. First in L.A. and then here and then back in L.A. and now here. All over the place for those 24 years, and I have a full, magical, fully engaged life. And many of you know that I have a fully magical wife. That's a gift to sobriety, too. I was drinking like a pig when I got here. I didn't expect to get you. But I did. I was miracled in to the treatment center where I began. And I was just through. Didn't know that morning I was through. That night I was completely through when help was offered me. So it's a hell of a ride, kids. Stick around. Any of you newbies, take a look at the board up here after the meeting tonight, and there is living proof up there that we're not BSing you. There are a lot of people with a lot of years happily staying sober around here. So welcome home. We'd love to have you stay. Thanks. I am thrilled that an old friend is speaking tonight. Nina and I were down here on a long project that I was doing 10 years ago, and we were down here for nearly a two-year stretch while I was doing that series, and we saw this rascal come in, and she was almost immediately a friend and has remained so ever since. I call Lisa Central's ambassador to the Arab Peninsula, from which she is recently back with her husband after over a two-year stay there, the two of them. So we got a world traveler here and a hell of a girl, and I love her to death. So thanks for doing it.
My name's Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
and it's really nice to be here. And I never make it up till 8 o'clock at night. I'm one of those people that I used to pass out around 7:30, so I still go to bed now about 8:30. So I'm seeing some people I haven't seen in a long time, and it's so good to be back. We've just, as Mike mentioned, moved back from the Middle East, and leaving Orlando, it was hard to leave my family, hard to leave my friends, but leaving Central was really hard because I've been to a lot of places and a lot of meetings, but there's something magical here. And like our speaker says, there's no wackos like Central wackos. But I actually found some good AA where I was, so that was nice, but it's wonderful, wonderful to be back. So let me share my story. I grew up in a small town not far from here, only 2 hours away on the East Coast, Vero Beach. And when I grew up, I was in the very early 1960s. And for those of you that are around my age, you'll know that that was when everybody just drank a lot. Everybody drank a lot, everybody smoked a lot of cigarettes, and people would have cocktails at lunch. If you were pulled over by the cops, they would say, "Be careful going home," you know, or they might even drive you home. You know, it was another era, and I can remember thinking, boy, I can't wait till I grow up, because that's what it looked like to me. And I come from a family where heavy drinking or alcoholic, not that I'm calling anybody anything, alcoholism ran in our family for a lot of generations. But sobriety didn't. So my examples of grown-ups were people that just drank a lot. Definitely not anybody who stopped drinking. If you weren't having a cocktail party, you were going to a cocktail party. And sometimes you were going to one and then having one. So drinking was around me a good part of my life. And I had my first drink. I've had little sips, but my first real drink was when I was 12. There was always booze in the house, of course. So my parents were out at a cocktail party, and I had a girlfriend over, and so we got into the wine. And I can remember, after having a couple glasses of it, this sense of peace and relief, you know, this ability to take a deep breath. Now, how much pressure can a 12-year-old have in their lives? Not much, but I felt good. And I knew that. And typical of all of my drinking throughout my whole career, I didn't stop there. I kept drinking until the room started spinning and I started puking. And I blacked out and woke up with a terrible hangover. And as bad as that was, I always remembered the feeling and comfort that I had when that alcohol started hitting my system. I didn't really start drinking again until I was, you know, almost 15. And then my best friend at the time, her father made homemade wine. So the alcoholic, budding alcoholic that I am, I suggest that it's probably smarter for us to steal a case of wine than just a bottle, because you'll probably miss that out of the case. So I get my first stash, you know, my first big thing of wine. And true to form, every time we opened one of those bottles, I felt good. All of a sudden, I started to be just take a deep breath. And I was also at the age then that I'd noticed men, you know. No longer was I the cootie vaccine. I started thinking men were pretty cute. And I never felt smart enough, funny enough, pretty enough, cool enough. I definitely wasn't cool enough. I was so uncool. But when I drank, I was. I mean, I was really good when I was drunk. Until, of course, I got to the blackout, pass out, throw up. You know, that was a constant in my life, too. But drinking that wine with my girlfriend then kicked off my drinking to where I drank probably almost any time I could at that age, and didn't really stop until I found these rooms. I made it in high school. I started having some accidents. As soon as I got my car, my driver's license, I started having accidents and tickets. I mean, it just came right together. So consequences started happening. But when you're 16 and cute, you can get away with a lot. You know, it's a shame as you grow older, you just don't get away with as much. So when it came time to go to school, I was 17 at the time, go to college, and I can remember then trying to find ways to moderate my drinking. Because left to my own devices, I was going to drink until I was drunk. I was going to drink until I blacked out. And I started realizing that everybody doesn't black out when they drink. That was one of those things that went in the back of my mind that I never really wanted to address, because it made me different. It made me something was wrong. And so I just put it back there and just didn't think about it. So when I looked at colleges, I tried to find a school that didn't have drinking, and I did. I ended up going to Stetson University, which at that time was a Baptist school with no drinking on campus. Well, there was drinking on campus. You know, maybe there weren't bars there, but my alcoholism did not slow down in college. The consequences started happening, though. I started having more accidents, totaling cars. I'd always been a fairly good student, but all of a sudden, the drinking became more important than making it to class. Somehow, I graduated, but relationships were starting to be a problem. I would be halfway in the bag before I'd even go out at night. I didn't really want to go anywhere that didn't have alcohol. Anything that required extra work that got into my drinking time was just not going to happen. And it just ended up becoming more and more prevalent in my life, and it also became less of something that I would look at. Anyone who would say something like, you know, you drink a lot, well, I'm not seeing you again, and I'm not talking to you again, because I just didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear it. So I somehow graduate, and now I'm out on my own, and I'm able to get my own apartment and drink the way I want because I don't have my roommate or suite mates watching. Not that I ever really moderated it that much, but it felt really freeing. So I moved to Orlando, and I get an apartment, and all of a sudden I start adding up all of my bills. Excuse me, all of the things that I have to pay for, you know, the rent and my car payment and so forth. And then I add up how much money I've got coming in. And they're not equal. They're not working out right. So I'm not going to cut back on my liquor. So this was when I started my career of eating potatoes. I only ate potatoes for years. You can get potatoes really cheap, and they fill you up. And this was before people thought carbs were bad. So I actually thought it was a good thing for my diet, you know. So I just ate potatoes all the time, and I got cheaper wine, and I was able to maintain my level of getting inebriated every night. And I also started going out with people that maybe I didn't necessarily want to because I knew I could go get drunk. My morals were becoming more and more questionable as I became more and more alcoholic. And people at work started saying they smelled liquor on me. And I knew that wasn't normal. And I would sweat a lot and smell a lot like liquor because I drank every night to oblivion and to blackout. I mean, I never really tried to control my drinking. Someone in these rooms, David, a good friend of mine, talked about controlling drinking feels like trying to hold a basketball underwater. And that's exactly what controlling drinking was for me. I mean, it was that hard. I would rather either not drink or just let go and get really drunk. Well, after about 2 years at this job, I lose it. Lose the job, get fired. Now, let's not try to sugarcoat that. And I get fired. Now, it's not directly because of my drinking, but I'm sure that time and time again, that was a really big part on it. But by this point, and many people in these rooms have heard the expression that alcoholics are egomaniacs with inferiority complexes. Now, I just was sure after I lost my job and when I would get drunk right before pass out, I would think they were going to be calling and begging me to come back. And I was thinking what I was going to make them do before I would come back. Who's going to have to say they're sorry? How much more money are you going to give me? Because I was sure that this huge banking system was going to go down the tubes without me. I really believed it. And the only time I wouldn't was when I would wake up in the morning with that feeling of hopelessness and despair and impending doom that was impending doom. And I just couldn't wait to get drunk again that night. So next job I get is a job in sales, which now I get an expense account to take people drinking. This is good. So I actually did really well at sales. However, I wasn't very reliable. And even though they didn't want you in the office all the time, they did want you every now and then. And I got the feeling that I was going to be losing my job. So I had to preempt that. So now I'm starting some really good big lies. So I go to my wonderful boss at the time, and I tell him, I'm pregnant. And I need to have an abortion, and I need to go to Vero Beach, my home, to have this done, and it's going to take a 3-day period. And then my parents want me to have counseling. So I'm going to be gone every Friday for the next 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm thinking, who can fire you under these conditions, you know? Nobody can. He's got to feel terrible. So now I've got 3 days off to go drinking and 3-day weekends for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And this was how my alcohol progressed. Eventually, I lost a lot of jobs. And I really didn't put it all together. I was sure that they were just crazy in terms of their ability to understand my worth, because I was really going to be the best thing that ever happened to them. But now I started doing something really embarrassing. Now I wet the bed. So now wetting the bed at 21 is bad. Wetting the bed at 21 when someone else is in the bed is really bad. And I could never tell the truth. So my immediate reaction would be, what'd you do? What happened here? And then try to say, did someone spill something? That was just like when I found out everybody doesn't black out. I was pretty sure that everybody doesn't want the bed. So it was another thing I put in my mind and just started doing more laundry. Simple as that. Started doing more laundry. Now, about this time, my sister, who drinks a lot like I do, in fact, she's worse. She got a ticket in Vero Beach for DUI. Back then it was DWI, if you remember that. And someone from AA comes to visit her and takes her to a meeting. So she goes to a meeting, and then she calls me and she says, I think there's something here. I think there's something that can help us. And my immediate reaction is, poor, poor Patty. She's got to quit drinking. Her life is pretty well over. You know, so she starts going to meetings, and I continue this downward spiral with my life, just terrible. And the more I hear about these meetings from her, and the better her life's getting, I'm thinking, okay, I'll give it a try. So 29 years ago, I show up at the Winter Park Group when it used to be on 1792 behind a paint store, and go in this room and think, this can't be the same AA my sister was telling me about on the phone, because everyone in there was like 172 years old. And then they had these things on the wall that were like from a kindergarten, you know, like, first things first, and one day at a time, which I never knew what that was when I'd seen people's bumper stickers, and all of a sudden it was like, I know what that is now. But I thought, this place is really crazy. I go in and I hear the people's stories, and I kind of like them. I mean, it was kind of interesting. And I felt sorry for them. But I could not relate. All I could do was compare. And so much of what people had done had not happened to me yet. Now, nobody was talking about wetting the bed, and I wasn't either. But most of the other things, I hadn't gotten the DUIs yet, I hadn't tried to commit suicide, none of that stuff. I mean, these people were sad. Eventually, I stayed for 6 months, which was a miracle, because I really didn't do any of the steps. In fact, I didn't see how the steps would get me from point A to point B. It just seems hokey. In fact, today I'm still confused how they do work, but they do. And during this time, this is what you call a planned drunk or a planned slip. A girlfriend wants to go on a vacation, so I say, sure, yeah, let's take a vacation. So we're going to go to the Cayman Islands together. Now, the best package that seemed like the best deal was the one that included all the free liquor you could drink. Now, I'm convinced I'm not going to drink. It's okay, we'll take that package. No, you'll be fine. I'll drink soda. You, no, you go have fun. Well, we landed in the Cayman Islands, and I lasted about 7 seconds before I had a drink in my hand, and I did not put that drink down for 4 years. And in those 4 years, all those poor, sad, pitiful people at the AA group had said things to me that had lodged in my mind, and like a checklist, it started happening in my life. Before I know it, I'm in jail, booked with a DUI. Now they're DUIs, and now they don't say, can I take you home? You know, or be careful going home. No, that's not what they said to me. They took me into jail, and they threw the book at me. And I wasn't even driving. That's a whole other story. I was standing by the car, and they asked me who was driving, and I'm like, I was! Just this cocky, drunk attitude. stupid. And my life became a living hell. I'd always battled with depression on and off, but now I'm seriously depressed. And suicide is in my mind a good part of the time, and it would become progressively more and more in my thoughts because I knew that I wasn't able to manage this drinking thing. And the idea of living without it just didn't seem worth it. I mean, I would rather die than try to hold that basketball underwater, which is what I thought sobriety was going to be for me, this constant struggle. So the big enabler that I had at the time ended up packing me up and taking me down to my parents' house and dropping me off, telling them that I needed help. And I did. But, you know, dropping someone off at a house where people drink like fish is really not the help, probably, that I needed. So really what I did was I continued drinking every night. You know, I continued drinking, except now I'm at a better location. I'm on the beach. And I would walk the beach in thunderstorms, actually hoping I would get struck. And this wasn't like once or twice. This was a lot. And life was miserable. I did eventually try to commit suicide, and obviously that didn't work, but I remember when I woke up from it, and I envisioned the idea would be like, oh, thank God, it didn't work, I'm alive. I was pissed off. I was pissed off that I was still here, because I just couldn't imagine what my life was going to continue to be like. So one day out of the blue, one of my mother's friends calls me and says, would you go to an AA meeting with me? Now, this woman needs help. She's really a bad drinker. And I'm not very quick at saying no, so I said yes. And next thing I know, I'm going to an AA meeting again. Now, time has passed. My sister is happily married to someone in the program. She has a baby. She has another baby on the way. Her life is glorious. I'm avoiding her at all costs because I don't want to see any of that. And I go to this meeting. Thank God my sister wasn't there. Excuse me. And I walk in, and everyone has this kind of glow about them. You know, they look really, like, genuinely happy, and it's puzzling. And I sit down, and the person is a speaker meeting, and the speaker is a nun. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, this is good. You know, I've got about as much in common with a nun as nothing. So, well, female, that's it. So the woman starts talking, and I relate to everything she says. My ears were open, and I don't know how that switch gets switched, but it was switched. I mean, our situations weren't the same, but our feelings were exactly the same. Exactly. And for the first time, I thought that maybe this program might work. So I jumped in with both feet. I asked my sister's sponsor to sponsor me because I figured if she could get my sister sober, I should be a cakewalk. And I embarked on the steps. Now, step one, powerless over alcohol, my life had become unmanageable. I could kind of see that. But honestly, I was so sick that I didn't think that it was that unmanageable. Here's a 22-year-old peeing in her bed, living with her parents, you know, walking on the beach in thunderstorms. I thought that wasn't so bad. But I did understand that my life was unmanageable and I was powerless over alcohol. So I could say I'm ready. And I did want to quit drinking, so that was the only requirement for membership. We moved on to step two. Now, I'd never really had a faith. In fact, I thought people with a strong faith were kind of weak, that they just couldn't figure out how to do life on their own. Like, if you were smart enough, you wouldn't need to rely on this invisible thing. And secretly, I was always jealous of it, but that was my outward thing. I just never felt it in my life, so I thought this might be a problem here, because I started hearing a lot about God in these rooms, and I really didn't like that too much. So my sponsor said all I had to do was be willing. All I had to do was believe that she believed, and she believed. She really believed. I could believe that. And then she said you could use the group, a group of drunks, G-O-D, and that I could see what was happening in meetings, and I still feel it today. There is a presence in meetings that I don't find anywhere else on the earth. I love to travel. I love to go to natural, beautiful places, which really fills my soul. But where I feel God is here. Hearing people speak, hearing the honesty and the truth that comes out from one alcoholic to another, I find that magical. So that I could believe in. So that's what I hung my hat on steps 2 and 3. And I decided to turn my will over to your ideas because my ideas really weren't working so well. And she said the most important thing for me was to realize that there's something out there and it's not me. Because I was really tired of running the universe. I really thought I was. I really thought I was in charge of everyone's happiness and everything that went on, totally codependent in ways that I didn't even know. Now I decided to move back to Orlando because I thought maybe getting my own place would be a good thing, even though my sponsor said no big decisions in the first year. Well, you know, I've got another good idea, so I'll come to Orlando. So I come back to Orlando and look for a sponsor, but my first thought is, well, maybe I've got this program down good enough that I don't need to go to those meetings anymore. I mean, nobody ever knows. People at Winter Park are probably dead. They were so old. Anyway, I did go to a meeting. My alcoholic talk and my regular talk are still fighting in my head at this time. And I come to a meeting and I hear a woman speak, and she's got it going on. She's really smart, very funny, very kind, very sober, very happy, and she talks like this, and I think it's so cute. So I asked this woman to be my sponsor, and her first comeback to me is, well, I'll work with you if you'll meet with me once a week. If you'll meet with me once a week, every Wednesday night, I'll be your sponsor. And my initial thought, now, I'm not very well yet. I'm only on step 3, you know. So I think, do you know how busy I am? You know, I don't say it, thank God. I've gotten that well. But here's a woman who has a hugely full life, who's willing to give up a night of her weeks to help me get sober. It came clear later. And actually, we spent every Wednesday night together for about 4.5 years. So it was really just one of the most wonderful things in terms of caring and giving that I saw in the program, and I continue to see it happen in here all the time. Anyway, should we start on step 4 and 5? Now, this is the first time I've ever looked at my life. I've never looked at myself. And all of a sudden, I see my history, and it's so clear that I've been a train wreck for so long. And I could justify each individual situation, but when I saw it all down from start to finish, that'll change you. That'll make you say, okay, there's no more bullshitting around here. It's not just a one-time show, and I didn't just pee in the bed that one time. I've been peeing in the bed since I was 21, you know, and I've been blacking out forever, and I've lost 8 jobs. Some people don't have 8 jobs in their life. And relationships were bad, and there was suicide attempts, and, you know, come on. So anyway, that was a really important step for me. And then when we did step 5 together, it's the first time I opened up to someone. I've never really gotten to know anybody, and I have this thing in front of me that's like, I'll let you know so much, but very few people get in. And letting someone in, and letting someone in with all the really bad stuff that I was going to my grave with, was so wonderful. I finally felt connected to somebody. I felt okay, and by just saying some of the horrific things and degrading things I'd done, they lost their power. They didn't eat me like they had been, and it was wonderful. Then we started on steps 6 and 7 because I'm clear now that I've got a little few more problems than drinking. I really thought that if I put down the drink, that was all I was going to have to do. But now I'm starting to see that there's a few more issues going on in my life. So, and I need to ask this higher power that took away my compulsion to drink for help. Now I'm up to the universe. The universe is caring for me. It's no longer you guys, although I like you a lot. And so the universe was going to take away my character defects when I was ready. Then I got to go to the amends part, which I was kind of excited because I thought this would be a good way to get some old boyfriends back. Hey, I'm sober now. You know, I was a wreck then. But my sponsor helped me with my meds process. She helped direct me on what I needed to do and what I didn't need to do. And honestly, I never really said sincerely, I'm sorry, in my life until I got to this program. I would do the typical I'm sorry's, but this is the first time I owned up and took responsibility for my negative and terrible behavior, and then tried to make it right, and then tried never to do it again. It was terrible, and it was wonderful, because finally I could look some of these people in the eye that I would avoid, and I finally took responsibility for me. It was like I was finally going to grow up and quit being this immature little kid who thought everybody was bad at me. Because this was the time I couldn't look at what people did to me. I was big on, well, he did this to me. No, that doesn't matter. When I did this step, I had to only look at my part. So it was a great eye-opener for me. And then in step 10, I need to do that real time. And I find it really freeing. And knowing I'm going to have to say I'm sorry usually keeps my mouth shut today, which is good. But if I don't, I do say I'm sorry, and saying I'm sorry takes the power away, and the other person and I, usually we end up being closer than we were before, if I knew them, and if I don't, at least I feel like I've cleaned the slate, because I don't want to be that person anymore. And then step 11, now I've got to work on my relationship with God. It's my responsibility to pray and meditate. I was taught that praying is talking to God, and meditating is listening to God. And so I need to work on that, because God is not intrusive. God's not going to come after me. I need to open myself up to Him. And then step 12, continue to work the program and all our affairs. So miracles are happening in my life now. Just like the promises say, you know, they're going to happen before you're halfway through, they were happening. My life was skyrocketing. My career was shooting off. I had relationships in my life. I had great girlfriends, a wonderful support group of friends that I could count on and I respected. I came to meetings all the time. I did service. I was at GSR. I was sponsoring people. Life was sweet. And that continued for about 4 or 5 years. And then I met a man. And he was in the program. I say that kind of loosely. He had just moved to Orlando from Manhattan, and he was sober, but he decided to not keep going to meetings. But I'll tell you, he had it all going on. He seemed perfect. And slowly but surely, as he and I got closer and eventually married, I started just going to fewer and fewer meetings. It was slow. It was insidious. I didn't even see it happening. I was convinced that I would never drink again. My life was magical. And yet, I'm becoming the person I used to be the less I'm around these rooms. We got married, and now I'm going to probably one meeting a month, token meeting a month. Yeah, that's good. And I'm not calling my sponsor, and my girlfriends and I are kind of drifting apart, because I'm sick of them saying, why aren't you going to more meetings? Because they're the kind of good friends that call you on your crap. No, I'm wanting my old friends who love everything that I do. You know. And one night my husband and I were having a dinner party, and someone brought out a joint after. And we look at each other across the table, and the whole conversation goes on, well, I think it's okay. I think it's okay because it's not alcohol. So I take a hit off the pot, and just like when I was 12 years old, I can breathe. I can relax. I'm finally at peace. And I think, this is good. So they say pot will take you to stronger drugs. Well, it also goes the other way around. I started smoking pot pretty much like I drank. Smoked a lot of it. Now, I didn't go to meetings at all anymore. My token meeting was done because I knew that that was wrong. No mind or mood altering substances. I knew that. So now I'm not doing any AA, smoking pot, and I start becoming exactly like the person I used to be. My husband's calling me Mother Nature. And I think it's cute. Everybody thinks that. And I become depressed again. I become extremely difficult to be around. Eventually, we divorced. I'm back smoking a lot of pot. My life is really going down the tubes again, and I just don't get it. I don't understand what's happening here. I'm not drinking. So what am I going to do to make my life better? Maybe I should have a drink. Maybe I should have a beer. So while I hadn't had a drink in 13 years, I had been smoking pot for the last six, and one day I decided to pick up a drink. Nothing good, nothing bad going on, just, I'll have a beer. If it doesn't work out, I'll go back to AA. So I had a beer, I'm taking antidepressants, so I projectile puke across the room, pretty much like The Exorcist. I mean, it was And instead of thinking, that's not normal, I think, well, if I drink every day, my body will get used to it, and it won't do that. So I am off to the races for another 2 years, and I kept thinking that your hats would be off to me, you know, that I would be able to drink like other men, and I'd show you. No. It became messy, very fast, and it's amazing that I lasted 2 years. I used to check my car in the morning to make sure there wasn't blood on the front of it, that I hadn't hit anybody, because I never remembered anything that I did. It was terrible. I became suicidal again. That's all I really thought was my only hope, because I thought by now that I'm drinking, I'm thinking, you guys are a cult. You obviously don't work. You have to go to all those stupid meetings. God forbid I'd see any of you in public. You know, oh, turn around. I'd drive another 10 miles to avoid you guys. And one night, and usually only when I was in the bag, right before pass out, was when I had the courage to actually try suicide. That was when I was. But that window is very short, you know, because once I feel courage, I'm on my way down in a pass out. So I was trying to bust open a plastic razor to get off the blade and wake up in the morning and see all this mayhem in the house and all that I was trying to do. And I had that feeling of loneliness, despair, that only alcoholics know. And actually, I've had that for a long time. But it was done, and I didn't know what was going to happen because alcohol didn't work. I didn't think you worked. I really didn't want to have a messy suicide, but I couldn't imagine living. So I was between a rock and a hard spot, and for some reason, and I've got to believe that it's the universe or God, I came to Central, the old building that was right over there on the parking lot. And I walked in, and I actually saw some old friends, and they smiled, and I kept my head down, not making eye contact. And then the meeting opened up and people started sharing and I could breathe, you know. I knew I was home. I knew that it was magic again and that I was given another chance. But until I walked in that door, I couldn't see that. I couldn't feel it. I mean, I really thought, this is a place for losers. It doesn't work. It's terrible. And once people started sharing, I jumped back in the program with both feet. And as Mike mentioned, I've been back now a little over 10 years, and my life is unbelievable. Why I would deserve to get the promises happen in my life twice, I don't know. Because there's so many people that struggle to get in here once. But my life is more than I could have ever imagined. If I had to write out the things I wanted in my life, I would have sold myself short. And I'm in a marriage with a man today who, believe it or not, he's never had a cigarette. He's never taken a drug. And he doesn't even care about drinking. Now, that's a miracle that he and I are together. And wildly happy. And then about 7 years ago, I went over to the Middle East with him, and it was a great life experience to go over and try something different. And even after this sobriety, you know, and knowing how great my life is, my alcoholic little voice says, well, maybe you don't need to go to meetings over here, you know, but these people probably do it really different. You know, it's probably not that good over here. And thank God, my other voice said, no, go. So I go to a meeting, and we immediately connect with the most phenomenal group of international sober people ever. It was magical, truly magical, to have AA meetings with people in different languages and 12, 15 different countries represented in one meeting, and it's the same. It's beautiful. The feelings are there, that everything is the same, and it made my time over there so much richer. And that was probably the hardest thing to leave there. It was my AA family that I built where I was there. But I know that it's everywhere. You know, anywhere people are doing the deal, the magic is there. And I also know that those people that are doing the deal are waiting for people who don't know if they want to. People have been so kind in welcoming me back in times when I didn't even want to be here. In fact, I really didn't want to get sober. I love oblivion. You know, I don't like to feel sad, and I don't like to feel happy. I don't like to feel. And to see how this program has changed my life blows my mind, because I don't know how those steps took me from there to here. And they say a psychic change is being a different person, and I am black, and then I am white when I drink and don't drink. I am totally different. I say my DNA changes. My thought process is so different once I have alcohol into me, because I can remember what I thought of AA. And honestly, this group of people here, you saved my life. You're who I love. You're my family. But once I put alcohol in me, you're a cult. You know, and it's scary, and I now understand more the cunning, baffling, and powerful, because I used to think when I had a bit of sobriety and life was so good the first time, and I hear people who say they went back out, and I didn't say this out loud, but in my head I'm like, ooh, that's sad. That's so sad. I said, you must not have worked a very good program. You know, because if you worked a program like I did, then you'd never drink again. And I really never thought I would. And now I'm aware that that voice probably isn't going away, because it still talks to me. It still says things to me. You can be alone, isolate. You don't need to make any new friends. One person is a support group. I have a tendency to revert back easily. That's why I still have to go to quite a few meetings. And I need to do the deal. I need to work with others. I need to show up and be present. I need to say yes when I'm asked. And I need to ask your opinion, I need to ask your advice, because my ideas aren't so good. They really aren't. I like to think they are. But the truth is, my ideas did get me here. You know? And my ideas will take me back out there if I'm left away from you all. Because it's happened in my life, and I didn't even know it had happened. I didn't even know it was going on. And the next thing I knew, a beer sounded like a good idea. So, if you're new, I hope you just keep trying it, because it is a miracle. It sounds like it's all hokey-pokey and this, oh, it's going to be so great. It really is. You know, that's what's so amazing, that today I believe that everything in the literature that they promise us, if we do what they say to do, in my life I have gotten exactly what they promise I will get. Every single time. And when I don't understand it or I disagree with something, it's probably just because I'm not ready. Because as I change in sobriety, the literature changes to change with my life and to change with my emotional level. And why I don't do it all the time, I don't know. You know, get all that it can have. I'm trying. But give the program a try, and work the steps, even if they don't make any sense. They still don't make sense to me, but they've changed me, and that's all I know. And I just, I love you. I love you for being there for me. I love you for keeping me well. I love you for helping me to be a better person, and for calling me when I'm not, and being honest with me, and being on this journey. Because it really is a fabulous journey. And when I'm sober, I don't want to kill myself. So that's a big difference, too. That's a big change. So something's working in here. And I hope it can work for each and every one of you. the time I've spent in the program, anyone who's done the deal, I've seen it work. So I think it would work for you if you haven't tried to give it a shot. And thanks so much for listening tonight.